Hello, you are listening to KDRT LP 95.7 FM. This is Karen Motokaitis, host of How She Really Does It, where inspiration and possibility meet. I believe there are many lessons to be learned from other people's journeys, and my lifelong quest has been to use inspirational success stories to motivate and empower others to achieve their personal best. How She Really Does It dives into the depths of people's lives to help others realize their own personal potential and goals. This talk show is meant to inspire, empower, entertain, and be a resource. We love to hear our listeners' comments about our shows or questions for upcoming guests. Email us by going to our website, www.howshereallydoesit.com, and send us an email. Our past shows are also available on our website or as podcasts from iTunes. Our children in sports. The school year has ended along with the mass juggling of different sports teams, activities, and school. Now summer has begun with other activities, camps, and more sports. Often I am asked, what do you think of my child? Do they have talent? What do you think of their ability? We have Dr. Paul Solitsky back to discuss youth and sports. Dr. Solitsky is a lecturer in exercise biology at UC Davis and specializes in sports and exercise psychology. Welcome, Dr. Paul.
Thanks, Corinne. Good to be back.
It's great to have you back. So this is, you know, one of the things that people that are listening, they also know that I coach swimming and I've coached all different levels, all different abilities for years now, for like 16 years. But that's a common question I get, like, what do you think of my child right now? They may be 8, 9, or 10. Not better? We're having little technical difficulties here. Those ones. We'll be right back. Live radio. This is what happens. Good? Okay. So when parents are asking, you know, what do you think of my children? And my answer always is, well, are they having fun? You know, because there's no crystal ball. And, you know, and my experience I've seen, and Pete's also, my husband, is, you know, kind of talent can be really cheap. It's, you know, are they going to be here for the long journey? Because it's really a journey. It's not about just today. So what are your thoughts about that?
No, I think that's exactly right, Corinne. The number one question I want parents to ask is, are they having fun? Is your child enjoying the process of getting better at and engaging in this sport thing? So we also know that, and I know it's one of our later topics, but talent identification is actually quite difficult, and people are not good at it, where a lot of, I guess, people in expert position, coaches, et cetera, believe that they are. But also, I think a lot of us parents in the sport community look to these experts for talent identification, and we're just not that good at it yet, especially at the young ages. Mm-hmm. It really gets much more of a 50-50 proposition the younger they are.
And so with this idea of future planning, where is my child heading? You know, and I mean, especially it's really interesting because we have, our coaches are just amazing. They have these incredible resumes, right? Because a lot of them are swimmers at UC Davis and they have these incredible resumes. And so parents will get really upset about, like, where is their child and where are they heading? And I go, well, look at that coach. He represented the United States on the junior national team when he was in high school, but he didn't start swimming until he's 10.
Right.
Or that kid, there's one of the fastest sprinters, but he didn't start swimming until he's 14. You know, and it's like we're afraid to suck. We're afraid that our kids just, and it's, I can't say that to 7, 8-year-olds, but it's like, I'm okay if they suck. I'm okay because we're going to get better.
Right, right. A perspective I try to get parents to take is, you know, do you want your child to have a music education? Okay. And you go, fine. Well, do you dictate what instrument they're going to play? Or do you try to engage in some sort of a process where the child tries out something? So maybe they try guitar, but they actually don't like the musical part and they end up going to drumming. Are you happy that your child has a music education, is exposed to music? Yes. Well, why can't we look at the same way with sport, that we get kids exposed to sport and being physically active in a healthy, active lifestyle? And if that happens to be swimming or soccer or volleyball or whatever, that's great. And as long as the kid's enjoying it and having fun and we're seeing improvement because they're engaging in the activity, mm-hmm. meaning they're going to the practice, they're maximizing the opportunity that you've given them, that's a win-win. We're keeping the kids engaged. They are improving and getting better. And to me, it doesn't matter if it's swimming or soccer or Little League baseball.
So why do we get so caught up on, oh, well, if they're doing it, it has to be worthwhile. They have to be a good swimmer or, you know, the talk of the town in baseball or in soccer or whatever. Why can't we just be okay with my kid's having fun.
Yeah.
They go, they're getting exercise, they're learning a skill. Why do we need that achievement beyond that?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think that as humans, we're kind of tied up in these, we have these stages we go through. And the first stage we talk about with kids is the romantic stage where everything's fun. Just this is the swarm soccer, and they just run after the ball. And this is the little leaguer picking the dandelions in the outfield. And they're enjoying themselves just for being there and doing that. Then usually what happens is some adult comes along. It could be a parent or a coach. And all of a sudden, there's an emphasis on doing things right. So you have to improve your swim stroke. You have to kick the soccer ball a certain way, or you have to run this way. And it ends up taking some of the fun out of it for the kids. So I tell coaches and parents all the time, we'd be very careful at that transition from the romantic stage to the developmental stage and making sure that we keep the fun in it. There's not too much pressure. And like you said, it's okay for them not to be good at the skills for a long period of time.
Yeah, and it's like a developmental thing. I mean, sometimes I'll see kids and they're very coordinated, or they have shorter limbs, right? So it's a lot easier to be coordinated versus somebody with longer limbs. And people are like, oh, well, they're a superstar. I'm like, well, they're like 7 or they're 8. And I just don't know. Are they having fun? Do they like to swim?
Right.
I'll
give you another example. There's a research study I just shared with my students just the other week. And they basically looked at 13-year-old boys who are going through their growth spurt in puberty. Mm-hmm. And they did a balance task with them. And because they were gangly in the long limbs, the 13-year-old boys could not do a task successfully that 15-year-old boys and 11-year-old boys could do well. So, again, we just have to be so aware of kind of where our child is at developmentally, like you said, mm-hmm. and then being okay with the kind of the bumps in the road as far as performance. And that's why I want parents and coaches to develop more of a process orientation than outcome.
Dr. Paul Solitsky from UC Davis is here with us, and you're listening to How She Really Does It with Corinne Modikaitis. So explain about this process instead of an outcome.
Right.
What does that mean?
Yeah. So many of us are caught up, for instance, in swimming is the times.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people talk about that as, you know, a measure of our performance. And while that has to be there, that's a necessary part of it. I think what happens in our culture, because we have such an overemphasis on winning and being number one, that this process gets lost as the sideline. And to me, as a former coach and now as an instructor, I try to get people to understand it's the learning process. Are you getting better? Have you improved from yesterday? Yes. Have you had fun and enjoy doing it? Yes. To me, we've done our job. They have improved. And to me, the results take care of themselves if you've done all of the process. And so to me, it's that focus of let's just take care of the little things, the big things. You know, there are timers that will time you, and there are other people that will tell you, you know, when keeping score and all that, it doesn't matter. And when I see these parents in the stands with the stopwatches or dads statting kids in Little League Baseball, keeping all the stats on an Excel spreadsheet and then sending it to other dads, I want to pull my hair out because, again, that's not what I think it should be about. They don't do that with their kids at school in academic pursuits.
Well, it's interesting. Just last night I was coaching my group, and then I wound up walking in and talking, and some of the girls would kind of notice that other kids were maybe better than, you know, because maybe they'd swam longer, whatever. And I asked them, I said, well, did you get better today from when we started practice to when we ended? And the light in their eyes lit up, right? And they're like, yes. And I go, see? And that's what we're going to do. Every day that you come, we're going to work on just getting a little bit better. And those little bits betters equal to a lot better over time. And when she did that, it was like, it was not about like being another people. I call it other people's business, right? Because you can't control what other people do.
Right.
And it's, if she just focuses on herself and where she needs to be, then we're getting better and we're going to get better. It's no reflection of where she's going to be in a year or 2 years.
Exactly. And I think children don't have that kind of perspective. So sometimes I bring it back to an academic thing. I'll say, are there people in your class who are better spellers than you? Are there people in the class that are better at math problems? Well, you'll get there too, but you've got to do the work to improve. So you got to do the practice or do the problems and the homework, and you'll learn and get better. So it's getting to see that progress. You remind me of a story. I used to coach club volleyball, and we were working with the 12-year-old girls 1 year, and they can be an interesting group. I learned quite a lot from them. But I remember midway through the season, three quarters of the season, they just were getting really down on themselves. We're awful. We're no good. It became kind of a team thing, and it was a funk they got in. I tried to break them out of it. Luckily, I had filmed them, videotaped them like the second practice, just to do some drills and things. And I decided to bring out the tape. And I said, you know what? You want to see a team that really sucks? And I played the tape of them, but it was 8 weeks before. Uh-huh. And they were laughing and they're pointing at the screen. And can you believe this? And I said, hey, look, just give me another 8 weeks and we'll go. And so for me, that moment, a teachable moment, was to kind of break them out of that funk of feeling bad about where they are or not making progress fast enough. And I think that's something else that, you know, we haven't touched on. I think sometimes the parents and the adults in the situation put a little bit of pressure, too much pressure on the children, that the results have to be in some sort of a lockstep template. You know, she hasn't dropped 3 seconds off her backstroke this season. Well, that's okay. And we understand that from developmental ideas, but parents might not get that all the time.
I had a parent say to me the other night, because their daughter's going to go to their first swim meet, and the daughter's like, well, Dad, what do I do? And he goes, I don't know. I played hockey,
awesome.
You know, and I was like, that's awesome.
Perfect.
Because it's,
yeah,
like, you know, and I think about, because I've talked to you about this, being a coach and a parent. What is my role? Right. And you talk about give them the towel. You know, you stand there, you watch them swim and, hey, that's great. Here's your towel.
Yeah.
You know, and I make a very good point of, when I'm coaching one of my daughters right now, my other daughter, I haven't coached her in a couple of years, so I'm her mom. I'm not her coach.
Right.
Even though I may see something, I never say anything to her because that's not my place.
Exactly right. I say that the role of parents in youth sport is supportive parent. No one else in a child's life can be supportive parent except you. The coach can't do that. Aunts and uncles can't. It has to come from you. So the child and the dynamic counts on you to supply that role. So exactly what you said. So like the parents keeping times in the stands and correcting technique and whatever, you know, there's a limit to that. How much do you help them with their homework? How much do their homework problems for them? Well, no, then they don't learn.
Well, and I think a lot of times parents have really good intentions. It's like, hey, I'm going to remind you something that your coach said because I don't want you to get disqualified. And one of the things, like, we even talk with our coaches about is, you know, tell the kid one thing. Because we can sit there and tell them so much stuff that the kid is like in their lizard brain, right? They're like flapping around because they can't even remember what they need to do. And they dive in and do the wrong stroke, you know, and then they pop out and everyone's like, well, we told you. And it's like, well, yeah, you told me like 12 different things for one lap of breaststroke, right? But and a lot of times it's just like, if you could just hang out with your kids, just, you know, because if they have the coach and then you can just be there for the towel and making sure you give them snack bar money so they go to the snack bar, you know, and,
exactly,
and playing, because that's real. It's. I call swim meets a play date with some swimming in it.
Right.
That's
good.
What I call swim meets.
Good. And I think that the bigger picture here is we're trying to develop independent children. And mm-hmm. that independence, it's giving them the little responsibilities that they can handle developmentally appropriate, and then giving them the support and the opportunities to maybe get some experience with a little bit of failure at that, and then mm-hmm. they learn from that as far as I didn't try hard enough, or I needed to do this, and then you put it together for the next time. So exactly like you said, to me, the swim meets, it's just a spelling bee. It's just a quiz to see how far they've come and what they need to work on. It's information for them on what they need to work on next.
That whole failure and that struggle thing, we had another parent who was just really upset because they didn't want to see their children struggle. And I said, well, isn't it through adversity that's when true character is formed? You know, when as adults or when through our lives have we just said, oh, my life was fabulous. And I, you know, it's usually when we go through some difficult times right. that we come out of it going, we get stronger. We maybe have a different mindset about stuff.
Yeah.
And it's okay to struggle.
Absolutely.
It's okay to fail.
Yeah. I tell people that, where does experience come from? When someone says, oh, they're really experienced, it hasn't been just from all the beds of roses and things going perfectly. It, like you said, it's overcoming the adversity, the challenges they're faced with. And in sport, we have all these wonderful opportunities as the adults in sport, the professionals and the coaches, to provide challenges every step of the way. That's why, again, I've devoted my profession to this, as I think sport is one of the few places that we really can provide all these learning opportunities in a safe environment that we can still support the child so they don't go completely the opposite way and run away and leave it. But we support them to get through these things, and then they can template that experience of getting through it back to the other things that are going to be hard, academics, getting into a school, those kind of things we know is in the future, career, whatever.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, I'm obviously biased to swimming because I think it has very good parallels with life because you may be the top of your age group, but then you age up and you go down and so on. But I've always used swimming kind of to teach life. Like, right. How do we deal with stuff? Okay, things didn't go the way you wanted to. Or, you know, like just this week, my daughter got bumped off the A relay and stuff. And so PETA talked to her, and it's really simple because it's based on times.
Right.
And, you know, yeah, I could put my parenting hat on and go, oh, my poor daughter. But then I'm like, you know, actually, I want this to happen at 9, you know, versus it never happening and she becomes a high school athlete or a college athlete. And then she turns it into some other meeting than what it really is.
Right.
Somebody just went faster than her.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean she sucks as a swimmer. It doesn't mean anything. It's just somebody went faster. And so I was having this conversation with her yesterday. I said, so what do you think about it? She goes, oh, it's fine. I have other friends on the other relay too. You know, I'm like, okay.
Good.
And I go, well, do you like to swim? Yeah. I go, well, why? She goes, well, it's fun. So I'm like trying to get, I'm like, okay, so why is it fun? I don't know, Mom. It's just fun.
Yeah.
Is the swimming part fun? Is the friend? It's fun, Mom. I'm like, okay, back off.
Yeah,
you know?
And that's good because the kids don't analyze it like we do. You know, what about it is fun? They just know that it is. So again, I always say it's kind of the fun test is that is the going out for the pizza afterwards more enjoyable for them doing the sport? You've got to have a conversation with your kid about that.
But I also think like I know through that my 15 years as a competitive athlete, there were different reasons that I swam at different times.
Yes.
You know, maybe when I was little, because that's what my mom signed me up, and I just like to be in the water.
Right.
You know, I've always loved to be in the water, but I know there are some times during adolescence that I really wasn't there for the swimming. I was there because I was hanging out with my friends, so I did the swimming to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some years it was because I really wanted to achieve certain things, but that really didn't even happen until college, I would say, or maybe like later part of high school,
right.
That it was like, these are my goals, and I want to achieve them.
Right. But remember, I mean, is part of our bigger picture teaching these healthy, active lifestyles. Well, those of us as adults, we want to go work out with our friends. I mean, it's the social aspect that keeps me doing some of my workout activities because I'm going to get running with my buddies or I'll go on a cycle with my cycling partner. That keeps me doing those things. So, again, I think we are instilling these life lessons in kids in ways that we sometimes don't even think of.
Yeah. More than just getting the ribbon at the end.
Exactly right. Exactly.
This is Karen Motokaitis, and you're listening to How She Really Does It. I am talking with Dr. Paul Solitsky, UCD lecturer specializing in sports and exercise psychology. So a parent's role, we kind of briefly talked about it. What are some other things for a parent in with youth in sports?
Yeah, I think that it's important that we understand and kind of divide up what are the parents' responsibilities in all this and what are the child's responsibilities. And, you know, there's a lot of information out there, but I think that as we talked about it, it's more than just handing out the towel, but that is the mindset, is that supportive parent providing your kids with opportunities to fail and then be supportive of them. But again, in a safe environment that they can respond to and come back from.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the parents' responsibility, to give them a variety of activities that they can choose from to find out what kind of things they like. The child responsibilities, a little different. Of course, that's has to be developmentally appropriate. But one of the things is we always want our kids to maximize the opportunities that we give them. So one of those things that is little bit measurable, and we can pay attention to this, is effort. You know, is your kid trying their 100%? And I think a lot of kids will tell you, oh, yes, that was my 100%, but they don't know because they've never pushed themselves hard enough yet. And so I think it's giving them little opportunities to kind of ramp up that effort and learning what that feels like. Well, you were huffing and puffing at the end of that workout or that swim set or whatever. What did that feel like? And the kid understands, well, that was really hard, but I wasn't able to do that at all 2 weeks ago, you know, to go that distance, that speed, or whatever it might be. And so I think they get to learn that it's their body's changing, they're adapting to the training, and they realize hard work pays off. I think that's the lesson that we want kids to get out of their responsibilities of having fun. And then the next thing that is the fun part of it is it is their responsibility to find ways to enjoy it. So if your kid comes in, well, the coach is really mean or this is hard, well, do you still enjoy being with your friends? Well, yes. So we can't let the negatives that are going to happen, they're going to be there, outweigh the fun and enjoyment. So we've always got to keep reminding our kids of, did you enjoy it? How can you enjoy it? Because enjoyment becomes a choice. So even though it's a hard practice, and those of us that have been athletes, we know this, you know, you go to a practice sometime and you know it's going to be a tough practice, but I can choose to enjoy it. And that's a more advanced skill that we want kids to learn, but they can learn it pretty early, is that, yeah, coach was hard and whatever. I mean, you had a tough day, but I still had fun with my friends and coach told three jokes and we were all laughing. And, you know, they get over it because, again, they're nine. You know, that's how they are.
Well, it's interesting because one of our older coaches or kids for our high school kids, he was grumpy on Monday, and the kids, I run into some of the kids, I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, Crawford was really grumpy on Monday and stuff. But it was great because they didn't make it about them.
Right.
You know, it was, he was in a bad mood, you know, for whatever reason. Maybe they weren't doing what they needed to do or whatever. But it wasn't, oh, we're bad people. It was, he was grumpy. That's kind of his business, and we need to take care of what we need to do.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and I really appreciated that, like hearing that from the kids.
And again, I think that you've touched on something that we haven't gotten to yet that I think is so important. I think that in sport, this idea of team is something that kids can learn almost no other way. I don't think that being in a small group in an academic setting gives you the same kind of team feeling that a sport does. So in your example, you know, did all of the kids still try to have a good practice even though coach was grumpy? Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of something that the team can take on itself and go, well, we still had a good time because we chose to. And it's using that term of, I didn't take anything personally that coach was acting out towards me, is that he was having a bad day. I'm not going to let him make me have a bad day. And the team helped me do that.
Well, it's a huge empowerment too, right? Instead of being like a victim of, oh, you know, responding to other people. Yeah. Because stuff happens in the world. Right. It's going to be a partner, a spouse, a parent, whoever, a boss.
Yeah.
They're going to have bad days. And it's up to you to decide, do you want to let that affect you or not? And learning that, okay, well, I'm going to take the energy of others and we're going to still have it in spite of you kind of, you know, mentality.
Exactly right. And I think sometimes there are certain kids that I guess the term is kind of the drama queen. You know, they're making a big deal out of, oh, me, me, me. And I think that's a great moment for the parent to make the lesson is, how can we make this about the team and others and looking at it's not just you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many lessons to be learned, you know, and also just like working. Sometimes it's, you know, kids may not gel with certain teachers or coaches. And it's like, well, I look at that as an opportunity of, okay, we need to learn to work without, maybe these aren't part of our people, you know, they're not part of our necessarily tribe, but they're in our life right now. And maybe it's just to learn to kind of expand who we can work with. They don't have to be our friends or people that we love or, you know, connect with, but there's still a lot of people in this world that we have to work with.
Exactly right. And again, you give me another great teachable moment here. So I never want to put the athlete in the middle between a coach and a parent.
Mm-hmm.
So if sometimes the kid will come home with an issue, and sometimes the parent's knee-jerk reaction is to call the coach. And what I think is, you have a wonderful teachable moment with your kid there, is what about working on some communication skills? Well, maybe if you went back and had a conversation with your coach and you said, so you can prompt them and give them things, you can have them practice it with you and role play it. And again, some parents say, well, I can't have my six-year-old talking. Yes, you can, but you tell your six-year-old, I'm going to go with you and hold your hand. Uh-huh. I'll be standing right beside you, but you need to talk to your coach about this because this is important to you in your swimming or your sport.
And that's the thing is that a lot of times I think when, especially parenting, right, when challenges come up, you're like, oh, this is not something I want to deal with. But really, those are opportunities for growth, you know, and if we could just change our mindset to be, instead of, oh, this is another problem, of, hey, here's a great opportunity that our child can learn or we can learn.
Yeah.
You know, and that, I mean, I was talking some parents off a ledge a couple weeks ago because like something had happened, and I said, "Oh no, this is just an opportunity. We're laying seeds in the grass because when these kids go off to college, who's going to be there? We're a community right now, you know, and we want these kind of mistakes to happen right now."
Right. I don't want this to come across like knocking parenting, but I think that many parents don't take the time to grasp those moments. You know, we have hectic lives. You know, people are busy. You've got to put three different meals on the table for three different kids. I've been to those houses. You know, sometimes you got to stop, or if you can postpone it till we're going to talk about that later when I put you to bed or something, that you have that teachable moment because, again, those sometimes they're so brief, but they can be so important.
Well, and I think it's hard, too, because it's like we, especially probably in this town more so, is that we're really highly educated, right? We know intellectually what we're supposed to do. And it's like we don't, you know, a lot of times it becomes this, oh, well, I am parenting that way, but my kid's still screwing up. Well, that's okay. We're not saying this is any reflection of your parenting.
Right.
We just have a teachable moment,
right,
you know, with the child, because sometimes just hearing, you know, and you hear coaches say this too. It's like, I was talking to a coach a couple weeks ago and he goes, I tell my guys, you know, all the time, the beginning and end of the season, don't, you know, we got to do it this way. And still there's one kid,
right,
and it's because he needed that one-on-one teaching moment.
Right.
He wasn't going to take the group lesson. He wanted to experience it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Sometimes they have to skin their knees to get the lesson, and there it is.
Yeah. You know, because a lot of times it's like, yeah, whatever. What, especially when they get to adolescence. What do you really know?
Right. Right. Or they think they know.
Yeah, they think they know, not what you know.
Exactly.
This is Karen Motokaitis. I have an announcement to make. Pull out your fiddles, guitars, banjos, you name it, for an acoustic jam session. Folk music jam sessions, noon, at the Wyatt Deck, Old Davis Road on June 26th. Come to any of them. Well, this will be the last one on this sheet. So come to the folk music jam sessions, noon, June 26th at the Wyatt Deck at Old Davis Road. This is Karen Motokaitis, and you're listening to How She Really Does It. My guest today is Dr. Paul Solisky, and we are discussing youth and sports. What's next, Dr. Paul?
Well, I think one of the things I'd wanted to talk about a little bit is perfectionism, because I get this question a lot. Is, you know, there are, well, parents will say, well, isn't a little streak of perfectionism okay? And I think that sometimes they're kind of denying or covering up what can be a bigger issue. And perfectionism to me is this kind of consuming, all-consuming drive that if you don't get things perfectly, you're a failure. And we've already touched on this earlier, is that sport is completely full of opportunities not to do perfectly. You know, in other words, making mistakes is all part of learning in sports. So I'm going to do skill repetitions, try to get my swimming stroke better or my baseball throw or whatever it is. That's going to happen out of, you know, kind of repeated mistakes, but then channeling the proper technique and getting help and coaching and all those things that happen. And it takes time. I don't usually tell the athletes this, so hopefully it's just the adults listening today, but it usually takes about a million repetitions to achieve true expertise in a skilled movement. So if your kid comes back after 2 weeks of trying to hit a baseball and they go, well, I haven't made contact yet, you say, that's great, honey, come back in another 4 weeks. Don't say a million repetitions. But, you know, you can be in the major leagues of baseball and strike out 2/3 of the time. I mean, you're batting .333.
You're failing.
Exactly
in
right.
In our society.
Exactly right. So, again, I just think that sometimes we have to be very careful about letting our kids, and sometimes it's at the encouragement or the enabling of the parents, is it's perfectionism, because sometimes that serves them well. It's not good for them. Serves them well in the academic setting. It can be disastrous in sport, because sport is absolutely full of mistakes, but learning from your mistakes.
Well, and, you know, like we used to talk in the sport of swimming about the perfect stroke. And that's even pretty much been thrown out, because, like, even Michael Phelps, you know, when they start analyzing his video of his stroke, he changes his stroke, you know, every lap. It's not the same stroke. And so what we're learning from that is that, you know, he's letting certain parts of his body rest and then he's gearing it up for the next lap. So there's this idea of this perfect stroke or mastering, you know, this technique. And then I'm like, well, yeah, sure. Maybe the kid has learned how to do it. And then they grow 3 inches and their limbs have changed again. So this whole idea of this, there's not an end point. It's continuous.
That's it. Exactly. And that's how we use the term mastery, is, you know, I'm trying to master myself within this environment, this given situation. So if it's in the medium of water, I'm trying to maximize my pull, all those things that you guys know. So it's that pursuit of the best that you can do today. That's what I was talking about. Did you bring your 100% best today? And then afterwards you decide, you know, did I or did I not? And I think that's an important lesson that our kids can even learn at their levels in youth sport.
And every day the best may be different.
Right.
You know, just sometimes what's happening in your life, what the homework load, you know, yeah, whatever the stress.
I had the flu.
Yeah,
I mean,
the being sick.
Yeah, it
you
happens.
Know. And so you're not gonna be at that 100% energy level.
Right.
But if you just do the best that you can
today.
So I have a question for you, because I've been asked about this quite a bit lately and I've gone back and forth. On our team, we do this thing about personal bests, right? So swimming's a great sport because it's about time, it's not about you know, some official called the game wrong or any of that stuff, right? So we just say, try to get best times. There you go. It's about you and you and the clock. Very objective. And so we do have this thing. It's a towel, and it has our Aqua Monster symbol, and it said, I've had a monster year. And you earn the towel, like, if you have so many best times. Well, so lately the parents really want the number of best times that you need to get. And I'm kind of really torn about throwing that number out there, because with my coaching and with my own athletic career, a lot of times when you have goal times or, you know, things that determine like kind of worth, what happens is it becomes a wall. And like, I know with myself, when I was trying to make my first junior national cut, I missed I was the 200 meter fly long course. I swam it 5 times in 1 weekend, 2 trials and finals and 3 time trials, missed it between 7 100s and 37 100s. That's just all mental at that point. Right. Right.
Sure.
Because I saw this time as the limiting factor. And then I know, like, when I see this happen at the university, and you know, like when people were trying to make nationals, if all they were trying to do was set the goal of making nationals, they either did it or didn't do it. But then what was their game when they got to nationals? Right. So I knew, like, when I wanted to be a national champ, what I needed to do. But it's not, so it's going beyond that. So it's like, I've been kind of hesitant about putting out the numbers because, hey, get as many best times as you can. Right. That's what it's about.
Right.
And if it works out that the towel becomes, but the towel's not the end all. The towel's kind of not a symptom. It's like a supplement or something of just doing well and having fun, because it's really about getting best times.
It's just a recognition that comes at the end of that process, mm-hmm. and that's fine. I agree with you. And remember, you know, as a lecturer, I might have 300 students in a class. Well, I have to be able to, we call it curve the grades.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it's a fairness. It's making sure that we understand. I don't release that information to the students because I don't want that to be the goal.
Uh-huh.
They don't know what the grade cutoffs are. I say, do your best. I'm going to take care of the rest. And so it's them trusting your coaching, is that you will have the parents trust your coaching, that you will recognize those kids that deserve that recognition.
Uh-huh.
And again, it's getting the parents and then the kids not to focus so much on the outcome, is because let's just say one of your athletes was confused about this and they sent them to me, the sports psychology guy. What uh-huh. I would tell that athlete is, okay, coach wants you to get a personal best. I don't know what that is. I don't really care. I want to know what you'd have to do that. So if they say, well, I'd have to work on my starts and I'd have to get better in this and this and my flip turns, great, then that's what you do. So to me, it always comes back to the process. You can talk about the end results and goal. To me, the goal is getting better at the things that will get you that personal best, because it's going to be the starts and the flip turns mm-hmm. and pulling water and the perfect stroke.
No, there's no perfect stroke.
Well, you, that day.
I mean, it's going to be about getting better. It's about improving your technique and, you right. know, improving your kick. You know, it's interesting because I had a 10-year-old boy who we just, you know, it was like kind of when I coached, it was very magical when I was coaching. When I was coaching youth a long time ago, I just had this group. We'd love to be with each other. You know, I just created opportunities for kids to come. They had this environment where they wanted to be at practice. We'd do Saturday morning. I'd have Saturday morning practice with amazing attendance, right? And then we go to the farmer's market and play ultimate frisbee. I mean, I would have all these kids, and it was just because they liked to be in that space.
Right.
And we were learning about swimming. It was, and in some ways, you could say I was kind of tricking them, because we just all liked to be together, and swimming was this area. Well, I wound up having these really fast boys, but the intention was never that I wanted to have, you know, top two relays at Far Western Championships. It was, I just wanted kids to learn about what was possible for themselves.
Right.
So we go to Far Westerns. I have 8 fast boys, an A and a B relay. The relays go first and second at this meet. And then one of the boys, he becomes a high point winner. Well, my goal every day at practice was that I was going to teach him, and I was going to challenge him to his potential, or maybe even exceed it, because who am I to know exactly what his potential is?
Right.
And when we got there, and then it was like, okay, well, let's just keep racing. Let's try to make finals. Okay. We're making finals. Let's see what, you know, do the best that you can. In the end, all those steps resulted in him winning the high point right. as a 10-year-old.
Right.
Right. It was never, this is the goal. Now, when I've coached college, I had a guy who won a state title. And then, you know, we kind of sat down and said, hey, for next year, you know, you have the potential to be meet a swimmer of the year, you know, and this is kind of, you're going to have to win more than just one title. And that was kind of something we threw out there, but it was never the end result.
Right.
You know, I mean, but I think for a college, you know, somebody who's an adult, that might be a little bit more appropriate. And for a kid, that's too long of a time frame to even, you know, because we're worried about how you're going to get to practice tomorrow. But so that's something that I always kind of struggle with. I guess that's, and I was talking to parents last night, I go, that's kind of just my coaching style. It's not about the end result. It's about, let's go in, let's do a little bit better today. Let's do a little bit better. Let's see, because if I say this is what you're capable of, and that's, then now I've put up an end point.
Right.
And you may not be able to see that. And if I can't see beyond that, because I mean, who knows?
Exactly right. Exactly right. You brought up a lot of wonderful topics. One of them is, the scientific process of goal setting has techniques that you are using, and that's exactly what you want to do. You got to make it developmentally appropriate. So like you said, what worked with the college athlete would not work with your 10-year-olds, vice versa. And it's just understanding is that we have to kind of hang the carrot out there for them that they will be motivated by it but not overwhelmed. So if you put the carrot too far out there, I want you to drop 15 seconds, the kid will go, I've never done that. I don't know what that would take. But even though we know within 6 or 7 years, 15 seconds, I mean, it's, mm-hmm. that's how it goes in those events. But it's understanding that you have to kind of keep the carrot, the goal, the challenge far enough away that they could believe that they can get there, uh-huh. but not too far that they don't believe they'll never get it.
And that's, I think, a real hard challenge. And so now, but there are some kids who do like to know what are the time standards, and they're going to go after that. Because maybe their mindset is they don't see those as limitations,
right.
where some kids may see a time and go, there's no way that I can do that.
Right. And again, what I would say in that situation, if you feel like you have a kid like that, is you can always talk about the back side of it. So, okay, once you get under 60 seconds, then we're going to start working on your – so I'm automatically telling them what the next skill set is that they'll earn to get to work on, but they have to drop under this time. And so they associate it with, to me, it's like little rungs on a ladder, is that I can't teach you the stuff that the college kids are learning because you're not ready yet.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, this is where you are on your rung, your ladder of climbing. And this is also what happens sometimes when kids compare themselves to their peers, mm-hmm. which we've talked about already, is that you can say, no, you're here on this rung for you. This is the challenge I'm giving you for right now. And if that's, we think we can drop 3 seconds during the meet this weekend, I think we can do that. And here's how, you know, you've got to have your good whatever.
And mindset, how important are our thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely crucial. Most of skills in sport is basically a kind of a target skill. So I always joke with the coaches when I talk to them, I say, you've golfed with someone and you step up to the tee and you go, don't shank, don't shank, don't shank. And because golf is a targeting sport, you've set yourself up perfectly to shank. Or I always say this to the kids. I'll go, okay, no one on the team right now, do not think of a pink elephant. And all the kids start laughing. And that's how our brains work. So we program our brains to do by our thoughts. So it's important that they think about getting up to the plate and going, okay, swing level, contact the ball. In other words, all the teaching cues that we've given them as coaches, that's what they want the kids to be thinking, not I hope I don't strike out. I hope I don't miss. I hope my coach or my parents don't yell at me. I mean, you see, that you can't get a hit in that situation. Nobody can.
Well, you know, somebody once said thoughts create the results in our life, and that can sound really woo-woo, but I always apply it in an athletic. The athletic yeah. environment is my testing ground. Oh, my goodness. And then I interviewed, Dr. Carol Dweck yeah. about mindset. The thoughts really do create the results, and you need to be cautious. Last night we had a meeting with our coaches, and so we were talking about some stuff, and I asked one of the guys, he's a UCD swimmer and stuff, and I said, well, why do we say touch with two hands instead of don't touch with one hand? And he goes, well, because they're going to touch with one hand because that thought is in their head. And I said, exactly. You know, talk about what we want to see happen.
Yeah, and there's science behind that. In other words, the thoughts that provoke the, we call it a motor program, the software that actually drives the muscles to do things. I mean, that's how our movements work.
So fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
This is Corinne Motokaitis, and you're listening to How She Really Does It. I am talking with Dr. Paul Solitsky. We are discussing youth and sports. Talent identification. Let's talk about that because that comes up quite a bit. You know, people really want, what it is like we're all looking for the end result. And my thing is that none of us know really where we're going,
right.
Because, and especially now our world is changing so rapidly. I mean, we didn't have the internet 15 years ago, right?
Right.
So there are businesses and stuff. I mean, the possibilities. But, when I ask people like, I've been going around asking parents like, well, what's your end game? Why are you having your kids swim on the team? What is it that you want? Well, I want them to have fun and learning to swim. Okay.
Yeah.
All the other stuff is gravy.
Right.
You know? it's just gravy.
Exactly right. A talent identification is a huge deal. It's been studied a lot across domains. So it might be music or art or academic or sport or movement. And I think that we realize more and more just we don't have an idea of what someone's end potential is. So with that mindset, we have to go in as coaches, as educators, and supportive parents is we have to set up the opportunity so the kid can get as good as they want to get within this situation, within these boundaries. And there are no limits. I mean, they really can. Everyone can surprise you. I mean, all of us have coached, have had those kids where you never thought in a million years and they take off or something happens later on. You know, when I do a lot of coaching workshops and I often say to the youth sport coaches, I'll say, okay, I want you to imagine this. Your best athlete on your team last year is going to be an Olympian. I happen to know that. When you get the kid back this year to coach them, are you going to change how you coach them knowing it? And so many coaches will say, no, I'd probably do the same things. And I go, okay, whatever. I mean, the research, again, doesn't support, and we do that with teachers, that that's how that works, but okay. And then I say, well, here's the thing I haven't told you. It's not going to be in the sport that you're coaching. And all of a sudden you see that look on their faces. They just look around and go, oh, wow. So exactly right. So as a coach, you get, like a classroom teacher, I get the kid wherever they are. Mm-hmm. My job is to move them up their ladder of improvement, and I hand them off to the next coach. And that's my job. And I make sure they have fun, they stay motivated, they've learned something, which is mm-hmm. what you said. And I think that everybody's getting what they want out of it. And those other expectations, we have to soften or lessen them because they end up getting in the way of that purpose, which we just talked about. So we were not good at identifying talent, but to me it's setting kids up for success to realize their potential in whatever they're doing at the moment, at the time.
Now, here's my other question, chasing coaches, because this is now, I just kind of laugh about it because all of a sudden Pete's this hot commodity of a coach, right? They're like, oh, where's Pete coaching? We want to go to that workout. And I'm like, all of our coaches, we're so very careful about who we bring on. And all of our coaches are very good coaches. And just because your child swims for Pete doesn't mean he's going to become a great swimmer. You know, one of the reasons I think our staff is so good is that we meet the kid to where they are at, right. And we provide a space where it's safe for them. Like they can be who they are. There's not judgment. Are you a good kid, a bad kid?
Right.
And we're constantly teaching. We teach. We don't train. We teach. You know.
And the other thing about sport that we haven't mentioned yet, I think that it provides a kind of discipline that our kids are actually seeking. But they like to know that, you know, this is the standard. This is what you do to get there. Once you reach that standard, you get to go to states or whatever. And it's just very clear. And again, as adults, as coaches, we're helping them with, and we're very clear and consistent about the discipline it needs to get there. And I think all those things fit together, again, within sport in a wonderful way that's really valuable. But yeah, chasing coaches, it's a whole nother thing. We can't do that with teachers. I mean, an education system, it's getting the kid to learn the most from the opportunity they have in front of them.
And I think everybody has an opportunity to teach your child something, you know, and there's different things. And just because, you know, and we do, like, a parent came up and asked me about something that I was doing. We were doing running dives, and she said, well, why would you do that? We don't start that way. And I said, well, I want them to learn how to carry speed off the start. And she's like, oh. And I go, there's a lot of weird stuff that we do that transfers,
right. But
it's hard to really see,
right. You
know, why we do stuff. I mean, we're real big into teaching rhythm right now, which is something that I didn't do 10 years ago, right? And we've got all kinds of crazy stuff that we do. And some of it's trial and error. Some of it's, okay, well, we're going to try this. And let's see if we can think outside the box. And if it does apply and work.
Right.
Or let's bag it. It didn't work, you know, or wasn't as effective or for whatever reason.
Yeah.
You know, we're as coaches, we're growing too. But the chasing coaches, a lot of times I go, you know, just figure out the time that works best for you, especially when they're young. Because when they get older, it becomes more rigid.
Right.
You know, and this is all that they have. And so just work with that. It's not, you don't have to have, you know, Pete Motokaitis be your coach or, you know, or Corinne Motokaitis. I mean, there's a lot of people out there that, you know, if your kids can connect with them, that's great.
Right.
And they'll learn and they're going to get better.
You bring up an interesting point about, you know, how do parents, because I get this question a lot, how do they evaluate coaches to make sure that the coach is good? And I say, to me, great coaches are, you know, they're good listeners, good communicators, but they also have a lot of tricks in their bag. So when the kid presents a particular problem, a learning, the coach can pull out a learning sequence, a progression of drills or whatever to help that kid solve that roadblock or speed bump that the kid's experiencing. But the coach can do it in a positive, fun manner. And you know my bias. I've talked about it on the show before. I mean, the yelling, screaming, cursing coach, throwing the clipboard, I want them to leave sport altogether. I mean, that's a crusade of mine that I'm on, because I just think that I don't get to do that in the classroom. I don't get to yell and curse, whatever. I lose my job. Mm-hmm. So I've got to find positive ways to get kids to motivate themselves. I'm not trying to motivate them. I'm trying to get them to love learning like I do and to improve and get better.
This is Corinne Motokaitis, and I'm wrapping up our discussion with Dr. Paul Solitsky. He's a UCD lecturer and trainer with the Positive Coaching Alliance. You are listening to Corinne Motokaitis on How She Really Does It. I think that is a very important thing that you talked about, because I tell our coaches all the time, I go, we love this crazy sport. Otherwise, we wouldn't be doing it still. We love it. And so if the kids are having fun, that's great. And then it's our job to kind of like show them why this is such a fabulous sport, you know, because we are all doing this for whatever reason. It's not because there's a big paycheck at the end of the day, you know. And I tell this to parents, I go, if your kids are having fun, they're like, but I want them to be more competitive. I go, well, that's their job. That's their business, you know. And when, at some point, that fire will come inside of them, and they'll do it. And that's when it ignites, and they really want to do that. And every kid is developmentally different again.
Exactly.
You know.
And that, again, another important point, that competitive fire actually – developmentally usually comes a lot later than we hope it does with children. And again, I see a mistake that a lot of coaches and parents make is they think, oh, my 8-year-old, my 10-year-old, it's usually closer to puberty when that starts to kick in. Now, you might get kids that are competitive earlier than that, and sometimes you have to tone that back because a lot of their friends might not be as competitive. So you have to be careful with that, the kind of the developmental stages they're in with competitiveness and what we term that in sport.
Yeah, it's all an interesting process. And my big thing is that, you know, I was talking to Pete a couple weeks ago, and just it was a kind of a general comment that I made over lots of things. But I felt like, you know, sometimes people just quit too soon.
Yeah.
You know, they just think, oh, well, we're not, my child's not good enough, or we're not doing this. And instead of just like kind of trusting and having faith in the process, you know, one of the things, and I come from a different background in swimming, because in USA Swimming, it's very, oh, you have to be committed to the sport, you know, 11 months. I mean, I swam 11 months out of the year, 11 and a half months out of the year for 15 years. And it was talent identification. It was kind of like getting rid of the masses, right? And then I came to this town, and I was like, oh, PUDs can become studs. You can really suck as a 14-year-old freshman and be on a high school winning relay, you know, by the time you're a senior. And if you have that mindset of what is open to the possibility, you know, you're not defined at 8 years old.
Exactly.
Of who you are.
Yeah, so important. That's so important.
Can you explain, we have a few more minutes, the Positive Coaching Alliance?
Yeah, it's a nonprofit organization that started out of Stanford University, and basically it got into place, I mean, I'll say it, because of a bunch of coaches that were really upset with what was going on with the negativity in youth sport. So they developed this nonprofit to teach and educate coaches on perhaps the positive ways to coach and to help kids learn to motivate themselves and all these things. And I just became a trainer for them a number of years back, and it's been so fulfilling for me to go talk to a room of 100 youth sport coaches. Some of them never had any coaching certification or training. Some of them are parents coaching their kids. And it, like I said, it's just a great organization. A number of our city, our Davis youth sport teams have, I think Davis Little League is one of the teams. I know I've spoken to Davis Water Polo Club. Again, there's different groups in town that have adopted the Positive Coaching Alliance model, but they're nationwide all over now.
You know, it's so interesting. And I don't know if it's, you know, like kind of in our, in the American culture, we have success, right? It's about the money you make, the job title, the house, you know, if you, the bragging rights of your children and stuff. And, you know, and I've been fortunate because I have a lot of evidence with my own career, and then the athletes that I've been able to work with too, is that, you know, we're just all people,
right?
You know, being an Olympian is just another person,
right?
And they have their own journeys and their own failures. They're not, you know, Michael Phelps too. I mean, a lot of times it's like, sometimes, you know, I tell parents, it's like, well, it's okay if they're not very good right now. It just doesn't define them. And if your child was good at eight, they're going to have their own issues that we're going to have to work on too, you know, other kids catching up to them. So don't think that, oh, you just see somebody and it looks like they're coasting. There's other baggage. We all have baggage. We all have stuff we have to learn and overcome and lessons to be learned. It's not just this easy road, because at some point it becomes very challenging. Maybe it's easier in the, you know, at eight or nine when they're the superstars supposedly, but there's going to be stuff that's going to come down the road.
Right, and that example is a great one that brings up your point before about quitting too soon. Sometimes the kids that are good early, they kind of coast on their talent because no one's challenged them. They rise to a level now that all of a sudden there's a challenge, high school, even college, we see it sometimes, and they fold the towel. They give it up when they haven't even achieved close to what their potential is, but all of a sudden it's gotten hard.
And it's not supposed to be hard, because I'm supposed to be great without it being hard.
Right.
You know, and I think as parents, most everybody wants our kids to, you know, have good work ethics and,
sure,
and that kind of stuff. So it's like, if we understand that, these are just, again, I think the word opportunities, these are learning opportunities, yeah, or teaching opportunities,
right,
is so critical.
Right.
So as we're wrapping up, any last words of wisdom for us?
Gosh, I just think that, you know, parents being supportive and really trying to provide opportunities to get a variety of different sport experiences. Have a conversation with your kid at the beginning of every sport season. Do you want to do this? What are your goals? What do you want to get out of it? Even if you feel like you know, having the conversation lets the kid know that you're interested and that you have their best interest in mind.
It was interesting. My youngest, our Samantha, our older daughter, she played softball for years, and my kids have just never had any interest. And I was kind of fine with that because I was like, oh, it's hot and dusty. I don't want to do softball. They take forever. Well, then my youngest kind of got roped into a softball team this year because her buddies were doing it. And at first she goes, well, I don't know how to play. And I go, well, that's the point of joining softball. Like, you're going to learn. And she goes, well, only if Molly will teach me. You know, it's her best friend. And I was like, okay. I go, well, fine. She goes, well, when Molly comes over for play date tomorrow, we need to practice. I was like, okay. You know, your dad can throw you the ball too, but oh no, Molly. So then she went and played and she loved it. And so she's like, now next year she wants to go and play, you know, and we keep, you know, with her, because she does really look at outcomes. I'm like, well, we're just learning, you know,
yeah,
we're learning, we're growing, we're getting better. It's, yeah, just about having fun. And she just loved being with her friends.
Right.
So now we're back into the softball world. That's just what it is. Well, Dr. Paul, thank you so much.
My pleasure. Always fun.
Then we've had Dr. Paul Solitsky, UCD lecturer specializing in sports and exercise psychology. He's also a trainer with the Positive Coaching Alliance. This is Corinne Motokaitis. Thanks for listening to How She Really Does It at KDRT LP 95.7 FM.